Hi, I'm Simon Brown, MoneyWeb Now podcast host, and I have news for you. You can learn to invest like a pro with MoneyWeb at the Better Investor Conference on 29 March. We'll have investing topics such as, can you retire in 2 million rand? Building generational wealth in spite of black tax? The pitfalls of investing in retirement property? Why the right financial advisor could be your best investment? How to tailor your investment strategy to mitigate SA's problems? And real-world uses for crypto? Whether a beginner or seasoned investor, this conference will help you become a better investor.
You can live stream the MoneyWeb Better Investor Conference on 29 March. For the free live stream and more info, go to moneyweb.co.za, the MoneyWeb app, the MoneyWeb YouTube channel, or follow MoneyWeb News on social media. MoneyWeb, your trusted source for business and investment insights.
Welcome to MoneyWeb Now. Business news every morning.
It's Wednesday, 29 March, US home sales data later this afternoon. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Houghton, Johannesburg. On the show today, chatting with Mia Kruger from Kruger International, update from specialist REIT Storage, and then Alibaba plans to split into 6 units. I suppose the question to Mia is China tech back as an investment destination? The share prices are back, but what about the story? Donnie Pretorius, CEO of Master Drilling, results as they shift towards becoming a specialized mining contractor. And then Leon Kruger, portfolio manager at Glacier Invest. The unfolding banking crisis in the US, is it resolved? Is it still a problem? What we need to know. This show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines from MoneyWeb. Marion Roberts surges after bid to regain control of its Australian mining business. Remember, the mining business was stuck up with the civils business, which went into liquidation. Looks like they might get it back. Business Day, Steinhoff comes up with new debt plan. Shareholders lose everything. The board agrees on a what they call radical draft plan to enter into insolvency process with creditors. Bankruptcy. It's all that's left for Steinhoff. Morning markets. US was red. S&P down 0.2%. Nasdaq off 0.5%. Asia is green. Sydney up 0.6%. And Tokyo up 0.4%. Commodities mixed. Gold 1,985. Brent 78.89. PGMs your red. Platinum 969, platinum 1,414. Rand is 18.18 against the dollar. Bitcoin 27,400. Tencent up 2.7% in Hong Kong. And top 40 looking for a 300-point green open, 0.4% to the upside.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Today now with Mia Kruger from Kruger International. Mia, appreciate the early morning. I mentioned in the intro, storage trading update. They're a specialist storage REIT. A good update from them. They didn't give sort of HEPs and stuff like that, but occupancies and the like. And I thought, for what is this fairly small niche? And yeah, never knock it out the park, REIT. And another solid set of data.
Good morning, Simon. Yes, that's spot on. I think this is a great company. I mean, we've seen this niche space, not only in South Africa, but worldwide, really booming during the COVID period where people had lots of things to store. And in South Africa, that surely is a trend. And with storage, and even in this update of theirs, they've told the market that they don't have a big churn on customers. The average customer in South Africa actually stays longer than 2 years. And when we look at their portfolio in the UK, that's actually larger, or longer rather. So yes, it seems like a good update. They've got high occupancy. So compared to many of our other REITs on the JSE, this looks really favorable. Over 90% occupancy at their same stores. Important metric due to the fact that they're always expanding and building new storage facilities, which just shows you there definitely is a demand in South Africa and in the UK where they are expanding in that area. So it's a positive update. And I think, you know, this is an important example of a good company and a business growth not always being reflected in the share price.
100%. I am a shareholder, and I think I'm exactly flat over 5 years, except, of course, I have received chunky dividends over that period.
Yes.
And that's often the story with REITs. We saw an update from or a statement, I suppose, is a better phrase of it, from Alibaba. They're going to split into 6 units. And it got me thinking. I haven't chatted to you around China and China tech in a very, very long time. Your sense, I mean, share prices certainly started booming, October of last year. I mean, what's your sense around China and tech as an investment destination?
Yes, Simon, I think the same story as I've been saying for quite some time, and that is that it does look very attractive from a valuation perspective compared to everything else out there in the world. We've seen these companies take a very big hit over the last 2 years, since the start of 2020, when regulators started to crack down on business practices in China. The market wasn't seeing this favorably. And then, of course, we had that whole discussion around ADRs in the US.
Yeah.
So, and how that would be treated. But a lot of the dust has settled. And I think specifically to Alibaba and this announcement that they've made, it's been taken very positively by the market. The share price was up over 14% on the ADR last night in the US and slightly less in China yesterday. But it makes sense when we look at the business unit split up. The company has really become a big company that we know. They're a leader in many of the areas in China already, but they're going to split it up into more sort of focused areas, each business being managed by its own CEO and board of directors. And it'll really streamline the business. And a big bonus here is it'll unlock a value for shareholders. We know that the sum of the parts is always greater than the discount that the whole trades at. So the business units look very focused. We know of Taobao and Tmall, which is two of the biggest online platforms. That'll probably still be housed and 100% owned by Alibaba. And then the rest of the unit, which includes big companies that focus on cloud computing and artificial intelligence in the one unit, local services, which is really food delivery and their mapping service in another unit, the offshore online trading in a third unit or fourth unit, logistics in its own unit, and then digital media and movie streaming in its own unit. So it makes sense. And it seems like the regulator in China is also starting to come to the party to help these companies, as growth is really a new force that the economy, or that rather that the government wants to drive in the economy there in China after opening after the COVID lockdowns. And it seems positive for these tech companies. So at these low, depressed valuations for these tech companies in China, they definitely look like a buy to me.
Yeah, and I take your point around the regulators. They, after sort of waving their big stick back during the pandemic, they seem to be backing off, if anything, perhaps even starting to be a little bit helpful. Mia Kruger, Kruger International, always appreciate the early morning insights.
If seagulls were hardy-dars who could afford to retire to the coast, what kind of bird would you be? Would you soar over the savannah or chase summer around the globe? You see, even when you stop working, your money won't. When you invest in Stanlib's fixed income funds, you can retire earning a regular income off your investments. Invest for more certainty at stanlib.com/more. Stanlib is an authorized financial services provider and a registered manager.
MoneyWeb now. On the money.
I'm chatting with Donny Pretorius, he's CEO of Master Drilling. They had results for year ending December 2022. US dollar revenue up 31.7% and US dollar headline earnings up 10.1%. Dividend in ZAR 47.50. Donny, appreciate the time today. Commodity prices been under pressure during the reporting period 2022, but you're still seeing mining operations and demand for your services. I mean, the prices are down, but they're still at elevated levels.
Simon, yeah, I think the short answer is in the copper space, platinum and even the copper space, which is about 70% of our order book, a lot of activity and certainly no shortage of work in our space. As we probably all know, you know, there seem to be a deficit in the copper space, so certainly a lot of activity. And the same applies for nickel up in the Canadian business up north in America.
What is your largest commodity that you are involved in? Was it fairly spread across them?
They're very close. If you look at the pie chart, gold probably tracking with about 2%, then copper, platinum close by. So, and then the polymetallics. So they're very close, but I think at this point in time, gold probably leading the pack.
And have you seen, I mean, one of the points that's made a lot is that over sort of a decade ago, we saw a lot of, a lot less new greenfields, brownfields from mining companies. They're now playing catch up. I mean, my sense is we see some of that in your results as miners are finding new deposits and needing to extract them.
Yeah, it's actually very interesting stats, Simon. You know, in the past 30 years, 330 new gold deposits were found.
Mm-hmm.
And in the last 10 years, only 29. So I think, and that's concerning. So and let me repeat it. In the last 30 years, 330, and in the last 10 years, only 29. So I think that's on the back of a decline in the exploration spend, which is really concerning for a company like ourselves, you know, and also for the commodities. We're just not sure where this next elephant, big copper or gold mine, is going to be. Gold probably better placed,
mm-hmm.
you know, much easier to access and to fly in and out, unlike your polymetallics and some of the base metals where you're dealing with concentrate and you need a certain infrastructure to carry those loads and to convey.
Yeah, I take your point in that. You know, an ounce of gold is worth a stack. A ton of copper, maybe the same, but more space. Africa, your largest region, makes sense. Revenue at about 40%. South America, second at 31. I mean, certainly that is often considered a sort of a second after Africa sort of mining resource space. And you're doing a lot of activity down there.
Absolutely. I mean, Chile currently is leading. I think all the countries when it comes to copper production. Peru mm-hmm. number two, DRC three. So, and if you look at the copper production count in the ramp up of Codelco, you know, I think we're well positioned. I think we're probably the largest contractor with vertical development currently for Codelco in Chile, and the same in the Peruvian business. Both copper top of countries and a lot of mining activity in that space.
And what about sort of Central and North America? I mean, I remember chatting with you, and this is a long, many, many, many years back. It was a relatively new area then. How's that picking up? Because I mean, certainly that's got Mexico, that's got Canada, and then a lot of oil in America, which, of course, not your business.
Mexico got down the block slowly last year on the back of COVID, but North America, the Canadian business was doing quite well. Voisey's Bay and Glencore on the nickel mines. So that part of the business is really ramping up very nicely.
You mentioned Glencore there. I mean, that is one of the important things. I mean, you're doing operations for global majors as much as juniors around the world. But you're operating with those giant names that we recognize in the mining space locally and globally.
Absolutely. I mean, we're doing for Voisey's Bay, the Voisey's Bay project, and for Glencore, the Raglan project up in Canada. Huge, huge mines, huge deposits to be mined.
What sort of utilization rates are you getting from the results you got? What, 140 raise bore units, you got a 38 slim drilling. What's your fleet utilization?
We're operating in the mid-70s, 77, 78 at the moment. I don't believe it's going to get higher than that. I think for this type of company, if you look at all the logistics and machines moving across the globe, that's probably as high as it would get. So we were in the mid-70s. I think today the number was 77, 78.
Mm-hmm.
But, Simon, frankly, I think that's probably going to be what the maximum you can probably sweat out of these assets.
Yeah, moving that equipment, particularly between regions, not easy. And you mentioned some of the more remote areas. You're also moving into sort of specialized mining, becoming a specialized mining contractor. You're looking at non-explosive mining. New directions for you, but I suppose a shift in where a lot of mining is sort of tending towards.
Look, Simon, mechanization and to try and figure out ways to mechanize the operation is certainly top of mind in our business. We need to figure out ways to shorten the construction period of the miners.
Mm-hmm.
I think gone are the days where investors and the mining companies can afford to wait for a mine to be built, which takes them probably north of 15 years if they get a large sizable deposit. And we need to shorten that period. And hence the reason why a lot of effort and capital has been spent in that space. So we committed to try and make a difference in that space to shorten construction periods of new mines to be built.
We'll leave that there. Donny Pretorius, the CEO, Master Drilling. Donny, appreciate the time.
Your money knows it's not just about the money. It's about your returns, returning the favor, and empowering people. Your money can do more to change the narrative. Beyond delivering consistent returns, investing in the Stanlib Kanyisa Impact Investment Fund can help eradicate poverty and protect the environment. Invest for more impact at stanlib.com/more. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Leon Kruger, portfolio manager at Glacier Invest. Leon, appreciate the time today. Banking crises, we haven't seen one of these in a bit. Suddenly they're all the rage. I mean, at the heart of banks, if we step back a moment, I mean, they're fairly simple. They take deposits, which are ultimately liabilities. They invest that money, which is, you know, into assets. And that first risk, I suppose, is how they invest those assets, perhaps.
Yeah, and hi, Simon. Thanks for having me. Yeah, so I mean, I think at the heart of it, banks are simple, as you said. I think in practice, it's probably a little bit more complicated than that. But I think it's important, you know, if you think about a bank, is to step back and recognize that, you know, banks are companies, they've got shareholders, and they need to make a profit as well, right? Yeah. So the primary way for a bank to make a profit, they need to earn a higher return on the assets on their balance sheet than they need to pay out on interest rates on their deposits. So this implies by design that they have to take at least some risk in order to earn a spread on their assets versus what they pay their depositors. So they obviously have a responsibility to manage those investments in a way, you know, to not compromise the depositors and to manage liquidity in such a way to be able to fund withdrawals. But if you go back, a bank's assets, therefore, they do range from kind of low risk to high risk. At the low end of the scale, they'll kind of have cash and cash-like instruments, and this is very liquid and can be used to fund everyday withdrawals. But a bank's not going to be earning a lot on those cash instruments. So a big part of a bank's assets consists of a loan book. So credit cards, car loans, home loans, business loans. And some of these loans, if you think about a 20-year home loan, for example, they're quite long-term in nature. And this poses a risk to a bank's balance sheet because they can't easily liquidate these assets should they need to fund withdrawals. So what the bank does typically to kind of offset the illiquidity of the loan book is they can hold listed instruments like government bonds, for example. And while these instruments are listed, they're also exposed to market risk, right? So their values move up and down with the markets. And this is typically fine under normal market conditions, but it does become a problem when the bank has to sell those assets at a loss.
And that's ultimately what the Silicon Valley Bank story was. They were holding a lot of long-dated treasury notes, which earn you a nice yield, to your point, that sort of gives them their profit. But interest rates up, those valuations went down, and then rumors start, and then suddenly a classic bank run. Everyone wants their money, and they simply don't have it. They could have sold their treasury, but that would have incurred a significant loss for them.
Yeah, I mean, that's right. You're basically explaining a typical sort of run on the bank when there's a crisis of confidence in the bank and depositors want to withdraw. You don't want to be the last in line at a bank run. But what happened to Silicon Valley Bank, I mean, that's part of the problem. But they also had a very unique combination of characteristics at that bank specifically that caused them to fail. So if you look at their client base, they primarily served venture capital firms and startup firms in the tech industry in Silicon Valley. So they had a very concentrated client base. If you think of kind of banks under normal conditions, they've got millions of clients and depositors. SVB had a very concentrated client base, few individual decision makers with very chunky deposits. And most of those, you know, most of those deposits weren't kind of guaranteed in any way, shape, or form by the government. And the bank also, if you look at just kind of its growth over the last few years, they took on massive deposits over the last 3 years since COVID. And it takes a while for banks to originate loans against those deposits. So a quick fix for the bank's management was simply to take those deposits and invest it into longer duration government bonds, as we spoke about earlier. And as we know, in a rising interest rate environment, bond prices fall. So so those bond prices lost quite a lot of value. And then as the tech industry started struggling last year, clients, as they typically do, they withdraw cash and they had to fund their operations. And so what eventually happened is the bank just ran out of liquid assets to fund those withdrawals. So they had to start delving into their longer duration kind of government bonds, which had large unrealized losses on the balance sheet. So in selling those bonds, what they then had to do was they realized a $1.7 billion loss. And that's essentially where the problem began. They had to kind of plug in that hole, and they tried to do that by raising equity. But when the market got wind of this, the share price collapsed. So the whole equity raise thing didn't really work. And it just exacerbated this whole kind of cycle of withdrawals until the government essentially had to step in to restore calm at the bank.
And the government has stepped in. The FDIC, the deposit insurance is up to 250,000, but the government has said, no worries, all is good. We will guarantee your deposits. Is that enough? I mean, there's still a bit of smaller regional banks, but would you be brave enough to say it looks like the worst is behind?
So, yes, I mean, it looks like it from this perspective. But if you think about it, you know, talking about that FDIC, practically it'd be very difficult for the government to guarantee all deposits. It's about $18 trillion in deposits out there in U.S. banks. And the FDIC, they've only got about $200 billion odd in assets. So they won't really be able to, you know, if there was a major run on all the banks in the U.S., they won't be able to step in and kind of guarantee those deposits. What I think has been more helpful is that the Treasury also opened up what they call this bank lending facility.
Yeah.
So this effectively allows banks to, they can borrow from the Fed over the short term, and they can use those high quality assets that have lost value. So let's say government bonds, they can use that as collateral. But they can get cash to fund withdrawals, and that helps over the short term because they don't have to sell those losses and realize those losses. And this does seem to have calmed fears in the U.S. banking sector for now. I think people are just nervous in general, nervous and cautious. So what we're actually seeing is in the U.S. is a shift of depositors from smaller regional banks into those larger, safer banks. So that kind of tells me that there's still confidence in the broader banking system, but it's just probably smaller regional banks. I think, as you said, will probably continue to be vulnerable to high withdrawal rates for some time.
Yeah, and that certainly is a cunning solution to the problem. And to the point, I mean, it's a last question. I mean, banking is around confidence. I mean, more than anything, I mean, it's assets and liabilities and P&L statements. But at the end of the day, it is that confidence which is so important.
Yeah, it's massively important, not only in banking, but in the whole financial industry. And if you look at it, you know, if you just consider the last 3 years, investors are understandably nervous about, you know, any form of bad news. And also after a period of 15 years of incredibly low interest rates, there's bound to be some cracks that appears in the system in this high interest rate environment.
It's around confidence, but also the high interest rates, that's fundamentally changed the status quo we find ourselves in. Leon Kruger, Portfolio Manager at Glacier Invest, appreciate the time. And that's our poll today on our LinkedIn and Twitter. This U.S. banking crisis, the run on SVB, I mean, is it over? Is it still going to get a lot worse? Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. That's it for today. Yesterday, I was chatting with Roy Douglas, CEO at Advertech, on results, and asked you what's your preferred JSE-listed education stock. A third of you said none. The rest was fairly tight between the three. Stadia just edging ahead, followed by Advertech and then Curo. Have your vote, have your say, Twitter and LinkedIn. The show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit StanLib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their early morning. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. Private equity debt booming.
Listen to the live stream of MoneyWeb Now at the same time every weekday. For more business, finance, and investment news, MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Hi, I'm Simon Brown, MoneyWeb Now podcast host, and I have news for you. You can learn to invest like a pro with MoneyWeb at the Better Investor Conference on 29 March. We'll have investing topics such as, can you retire in 2 million rand? Building generational wealth in spite of black tax? The pitfalls of investing in retirement property? Why the right financial advisor could be your best investment? How to tailor your investment strategy to mitigate SA's problems? And real-world uses for crypto. Whether a beginner or seasoned investor, this conference will help you become a better investor.
You can live stream the MoneyWeb Better Investor Conference on 29 March. For the free live stream and more info, go to moneyweb.co.za, the MoneyWeb app, the MoneyWeb YouTube channel, or follow MoneyWeb News on social media. MoneyWeb, your trusted source for business and investment insights.